And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
The two-minute warning has sounded and the Washington Deciders are in this to win. It's been a rough game from the start, which has turned even some of their fans against them. But winning is everything to this team, so they're pulling out their best trick plays. Okay, the quarterback has the ball. He's handed it off to Kempthorne, who's trying an end run. Wait, what's that? Oh my gosh, what rules are they playing by? That doesn't look fair. We'll be right back to take a closer look at this questionable play when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
It's true. With time running out, the Bush administration is rewriting the rule book. In their attempt to hopefully hand the ball off to a new Republican leader in November, they are recrafting the rules of the game. Advantage, their team. Today, we go in-depth as we look at the new game plan, which simply rewrites the will of the American people by executive fiat. Personally, I think it's yet another un-American, undemocratic expression of something between a total numbness to reality or a willful stealing of the goodwill of the American people. The removal of environmental protection now from whole realms of our public policies and lands needs to be understood for what it is, a dangerous attack on the very fabric of our living systems. We begin today's show with a discussion with Rob Maraca, who is an articulate spokesman and defender of the protections offered to endangered species, which are being erased right now. And in segment two, we talk with Executive Director of the Center for Biological Diversity, Kieron Suckling, who provides a passionate and well-informed perspective on the significance this policy of transforming the spirit and letter of the law for protection of our endangered species without congressional view, and what it portends for the well-being of our great living legacy of America's lands and waters. So let's get started. August 2008, there's 2 months until the election, and 4 months until there's a new administration, and that may have a factor in terms of what we're going to be talking about today, which has to do with some radical changes, once again, coming out of the administration as it regards to oversight, particularly in terms of endangered species. To help us really understand this particular evolving story, we're now talking with Rob Maraca, who is with the Center for Biological Diversity at biologicaldiversity.org. Rob is joining us from Las Vegas. Rob, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you, Sydney.
Well, how are things in Las Vegas?
Well, besides hot, they're very busy.
Ah, in which sense?
We have lots going on in the state regarding environmental issues, and the Center for Biological Diversity is relatively new to the state of Nevada. We just opened our Nevada office in February, so I'm deep in the thick of it, providing input and insight on federal and other projects and their potential impacts on species or habitats and climate change.
Well, there's been an evolving story about changes that are being proposed by Dirk Kempthorne. Can you give us a background on what's happening?
For the past 35 years, we've had a system in place of checks and balances that has worked to serve species and their habitats very well. Basically, it's a process called consultation. So when a federal agency that is going to be doing a project or a private group with federal funding is going to be doing a project, they must consult with Fish and Wildlife Service to check and see if there are any threatened or endangered species or critical habitat present in the project area. It's a very simple task. The action agency, for instance, the Forest Service or BLM or Federal Highways, would request from the Fish and Wildlife Service a list of species that occur within their project area or critical habitat that has been identified within their project area. And that's the beginning of a process called informal consultation. And then if there's no species or critical habitat present, well, then that's the end of consultation. But if there is, then the action agency is tasked with performing performing what's called a biological evaluation. And what a biological evaluation does very briefly is determine, will this proposed action have an effect, or could it have an effect on species or their habitats? And if the answer is no, and the Fish and Wildlife Service agrees, that, again, is the end of informal consultation, a very streamlined, very speedy process. But if an action may have an effect, then together the Fish and Wildlife Service and the action agency enter into discussions on will it be likely to adversely affect the species or the habitat. If they determine that it is not likely to adversely affect, again, the Fish and Wildlife Service would concur, and that would be the end of the informal consultation process. If there is a likely adverse effect from the action being proposed, then the action agency and the Fish and Wildlife Service would go into something called formal consultation. And what the proposed rule does, proposed change to the regulations does, is basically take the informal process out. The peer review and the checks and balances provided by agency biologists checking with counterparts who are probably more knowledgeable in Fish and Wildlife Service about their analysis of the situation is being eliminated and handed solely over to the action agency, which goes against traditional science. In science, we have standards for what science is. It's not value-based. Science is finding facts and proving or disproving those facts. And when you can measure an action, like a new drug, for instance, for the treatment of, say, AIDS, we can do statistical analysis on the effectiveness of that drug. And that statistical analysis is part of the quality control, quality assurance, if you will. But even there, that result, that study result, and I think everybody's familiar, goes before a panel of others to be evaluated, looked at, scrutinized, and then is published in some kind of a peer-reviewed journal. For actions of federal agencies, however, you can't do a statistical analysis. So the only check and balance, if you will, to make sure that it is a objective and bias-free look is subjecting it to peer review, which is what the informal consultation process did. And now that is being removed, and it's kind of analogous to the fox guarding the hen house. The action agencies are tasked with doing actions. Unfortunately, more and more, the political process is interfering with good science and good management on the ground. And biologists and ecologists on the ground in the action agencies are more and more being under pressure from their superiors who are reporting to Washington to come up with certain results that may not be supported by good science. And that is why we need to retain the informal consultation process.
As to why that's happening, that's worthy of about 4 days' worth of discussion, which
yeah,
we can't get into here. But there are some very, very powerful forces at work here that are affecting all of these things. You're absolutely right. Good science requires people knowledgeable and controlled tests, particularly as you're dealing with any kind of animal life or flora, fauna, whatever it is. And we're not just talking about animals. We're also talking about plants and ecosystems and balance. Those are very complex sciences, and people have to have real knowledge to be able to make those determinations. But what, as you say, is being forced to happen now is that all of those decisions, those preliminary decisions, scientifically based decisions, or at least they should be, are now being dumped into the laps of each one of these individual agencies, who then are supposed to somehow come up with this expertise to make those decisions. Is that really possible?
I think in a perfect world it is possible, but unfortunately, for the past probably 30 years or more, we've not lived in a perfect world. Increasingly, the action agencies are given a set of expectations by the administration. In some cases, in the 80s, for instance, the big push was to get timber harvest off of the public lands. More recently, the big push is for oil and gas leasing. So those expectations for production kind of bump up against the agency's ability to be unbiased in determining whether or not that action is going to adversely affect species or critical habitat. And therein lies the rub. The other problem that the agencies are facing, even if you could remove the political interference, the budgets for the action agencies have been on a steady decrease under the Bush administration. And I'll just give you a couple of examples. The Fish and Wildlife Service, which is tasked with administering the Endangered Species Act, for the past several years has seen rapid declines in their budget. For instance, in 2008, they experienced a 7.5% reduction, which amounted to $5.5 million. In the proposed 2009 budget, there's a further 2.5% reduction, or $3.7 million. And the consequence to the agency, the Fish and Wildlife Service, is that they have approximately 30% of the positions that deal with the Endangered Species Act administration vacant. They can't fill them. Because you add on the real budget decreases, onto that you have to tack on inflation and in cost of doing business, which is also going up, with drives the purchasing power, if you will, of their budget dollar down. So then let's take a look at the Forest Service. In 2008, the Forest Service in their Fish and Wildlife Program had an 11% reduction, which amounted to $14.1 million. In the proposed 2009 budget, there's a further 10.6% decline, or about $14 million. And they've had to cut 130 positions across the nation in the Forest Service that deal with the Fish and Wildlife Program. Now, getting back to the proposed changes in the regulations, what does this mean? What it means is that the administration's argument that the agencies are adequately staffed to do their own analysis of whether or not a project is going to adversely affect species or their critical habitat is flawed, because they've not supported the agencies via the budget to be able to acquire the staffing necessary. So it's a rather dismal situation, and it really is a huge threat to the 1,300 and some species that are listed on the endangered species list and those species that are in the queue waiting to be listed. This administration has been very, very, very slow on acting on petitions to list new species. We were just successful in having the polar bear added after many years of tries. So it is a rather bleak situation right now.
One of the upsides of this, one could hope, would be that there would be all sorts of new openings announced in every agency in the country for field biologists and expertise, but I don't think that's probably in the future.
Now, wouldn't that be nice? But given the budget trends that I've told you about, that is not in the cards right now.
Another level of challenge here is, whereas before the power rested in law, that's being changed now such that, and this is what's allowing this to happen, and that is by executive fiat, in other words, an agency director, has now the right to make these internal changes without there being changes by the law, so that very many of these types of things are happening under the radar screen.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate situation as well. I think we're all familiar with a former congressman, Richard Pombo from California, who has over the years tried to make drastic changes to the Endangered Species Act legislatively, and fortunately he failed. Unfortunately, what the administration has done under these proposed changes to the regulations is incorporate that which they failed to get legislatively and put it into effect through an administrative process, which, as you pointed out, is largely blind to the public. They publish a notice in the Federal Register, and unless you're up to speed and check the Federal Register or on some kind of an action alert network, you probably won't even know what's happened. The other disconcerting thing is that the standard for public review for something of this magnitude is 60 to 90 days. In this situation, the administration has chosen to give the public only 30 days to review a highly complex, very technical proposed change to the regulations. 30 days is wholly inadequate for even those familiar with the topic to provide good and reasoned comments, more or less the general public and citizen activists who might be interested.
How is input by the public being dealt with in perhaps these new regulations? In other words, Do they have any legal bearing? If there is enough outcry about a particular endangered species that may be affected by some action in an agency, is there still an opportunity for people to have legal action to stop that or to slow it down or to have it reviewed at another level?
Fortunately, to a point, for that, we have another keystone environmental law, the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, as people call it, which requires a federal agency to do an environmental analysis and to fully disclose the impacts and consequences of projects on the environment and both human and natural. What these proposed changes to the ESA regulations do is by exempting a number of activities, including those, for instance, that deal with global warming and greenhouse gases, from the consultation process and from evaluation under the Endangered Species Act for their consequences to species and their habitats. By doing that, they're taking away a good chunk of information that would have been brought into the NEPA process and more fully disclosed to the public. So again, it's kind of a backdoor way. They're limiting the scope of what is going to be looked at as far as Endangered Species Act, which then provides the agencies more of an opportunity to hide those in NEPA because there's no paper trail about the potential impacts. It hasn't been looked at. They're going to be able to say it's inconsequential. There was no consultation required. So it sort of corrupts the whole process. But in theory, NEPA would be another opportunity for the consequences of these proposed changes to be vetted before the public, and then through the NEPA's public involvement process, the public would have an opportunity to weigh in.
This particular point of power, that is to say the effect on endangered species from issues that relate to global warming, and were possibly one of the last-ditch efforts to control or at least affect certain types of actions. So without that, there is almost no way to legally challenge certain actions. Polar bear have been utilized to challenge certain actions, putting in coal power plants, for example. And in the past, it would be required that to have that okayed, people would have to do an environmental impact statement to say, how might this affect the polar bear?
Yes.
That's kind of off the table now.
Yeah, it is. And unfortunately, because the agency, the Fish and Wildlife Service specifically, in New Mexico, required as part of the consultation process for a new coal-powered fire plant, the action agency to consult regarding global warming and the impacts on endangered listed species such as the polar bear. What this new proposal to the regulations would do would be to reverse that agency policy and, in effect, put any kind of discussion about the impacts of greenhouse gases and global warming off the table when it comes to effects on listed species and their critical habitats.
Mm-hmm. Rob, at one point in your career, you were a supervisor of Utah's Fish Lake National Forest. That's a very monumental task. There are so many different angles and aspects to that. I'm just curious, based on your experience, how you see this really affecting, for example, national forests. On the ground, how is this going to affect this country and environmental legacy?
Well, I'd be very, very afraid. As a forest supervisor, you have responsibilities under the law to ensure that the legal requirements and the biological requirements for the conservation of endangered species and plants are being met. And with the staffing cutbacks, reducing the number of field botanists and biologists and ecologists on the ground for an agency like the Forest Service, it becomes more and more difficult to, from a science perspective, adequately evaluate and determine the effects of an action on listed species. If you don't have the people there with the expertise, you're not going to be able to do a very good job. You're basically going to be winging it. One of the things that having a partner like the Fish and Wildlife Service involved in the consultation process was you could tap into their wealth of knowledge. And even though your field biologist, for instance, might be new and may not have a full grasp of the ecology of a species and its habitat, they would be able to bounce their ideas off of a Fish and Wildlife Service biologist, and together we can make the determination, is this action going to adversely affect the species, and if so, how can we modify it so it doesn't? Or maybe it doesn't have an effect, and we can all be happy and go about our business. But that's being taken away, so I think it's going to put well-meaning managers and biologists on the ground in a very difficult situation to redeem their responsibilities under the Endangered Species Act.
Well, with some of the mantras that we're hearing these days of drill, 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 and there's a lot of pressure, and perhaps, although I'm not exactly sure that it's true, the public is beginning to embrace that concept, although I kind of really wonder if it is. That means that there is a political effort to really expand out dramatic changes on our public lands. It's been happening for years, but now it's becoming a mantra. Do you see that type of movement impacting some of the historic protections on the public lands?
Well, I do, and as you said, it's sort of like a steamroller running over the species, particularly those in the Intermountain West and Southwest. Just an example, the Bureau of Land Management, which manages a great deal of surface resources in the West, as well as all of the underground resources, 37% of their budget in this current fiscal year for Fish and Wildlife's program went to supporting the oil and gas development program. So what they're doing is putting their biologist, instead of working on recovery plan and actions for instance, the sage grouse in Wyoming or Colorado, Utah, and Nevada, the biologists are working on writing reports in support of oil and gas leasing. And this is where the political influence comes to bear on well-meaning biologists. They are basically being told by the administration, we want to streamline the permitting process. To do that, we need you to sign off that this action will not adversely affect species. They're given very short deadlines. They're basically given the answer before they start writing, and it's co-opting and corrupting the entire process.
I would have to believe there's some very frustrated scientists. I'm a scientist myself, and, you know, we hold to the truth. I can't say something is real until I really have a sense that it is. The politicization of the process must be extremely difficult to people who otherwise come to their task with an effort to just discern the truth.
It really is, and I experienced that firsthand. I started out my career in the Forest Service as a silviculturist, one that deals with tending the forest for objectives and resources. And I moved into then forest ecology, a little broader perspective, and worked my way up through the organization and spent a lot of time in Washington working on ecosystem management in the early 90s. And only to be frustrated then when the Bush administration came in, and I was a forest supervisor, as you mentioned, on the Fish Lake Forest, with the new expectations, the new marching orders, the new demands to get products off the forest, seemingly in disregard of good science. It led to me to leave the agency early. I took an early retirement because I could not ethically stay in the Forest Service under the Bush administration's marching orders.
Well, it is very personal to you, and I appreciate your sharing that. That's significant. At this point, what could people do? The unfortunate thing is the fact that there has been such a concentration of, as you say, it's like a steamroller that's just moving forward. I don't exactly know how we're supposed to turn that around in any sort of reasonable amount of time, but perhaps you have a different perspective, or maybe not.
Well, I think it's not hopeless. Maybe the light at the end of the tunnel might be the 4 months that you mentioned remaining before a new administration. And to be quite frank, I don't know where Barack Obama or John McCain stand on this particular issue. And in fact, I doubt that they're even aware of it, given some of the higher level, broader issues that they're dealing with in their campaigns. But one of the things that I think the citizen activists and conservationists can depend on is that the national environmental groups, such as the Center for Biological Diversity, will be taking this on legally and challenging the administration on this point. There's also the opportunity for the public to weigh in individually by submitting comments within the short 30-day window, expressing their displeasure with what is being proposed by the administration. But maybe more importantly, and I think all conservation actions really are most fundamentally important where the action hits the ground. And I would just say that activists and conservationists need to remain active in the local planning efforts that are going on in their areas and providing sound input and calling for the use of sound science in informing decisions. So I think being involved in the NEPA process is perhaps the way most people can still make a difference and affect the outcomes.
There's still time before this election happens. People do have an opportunity to meet with these candidates in public forum. If a person were to formulate a question to ask them, how might they do that? Because unfortunately, these questions are never asked by the talking heads. Maybe one lucky person may be able to ask that question somewhere between now and the election to at least draw the answer out.
I think if you pose it on a broad policy, how will you ensure that science is not co-opted by the political process so decision makers have access to independently reviewed, sound, defensible science in making your decisions? We all know that decisions ultimately have to blend science, societal values, and other values other than the species. But what the species need is for a sound position. Here is the impact if you do this, without it being softening or being weakened by the political process before it even gets to that point.
Very good. Put your thinking caps on, everybody, and ask that question. I know that in the 2004 election, environmental were raised one time. Unfortunately, in this particular go-around, the environment now has been morphed into energy independence, and somehow nature and this balance of the living systems is completely off the table. We're shooting ourselves in the middle of the forehead here if we don't really understand that it's all interconnected, and it still is, and it always will be. Rob Maraca, who's with the Center for Biological Diversity, I want to thank you so much for lending your voice here on the Wild Side News.
Thank you, Sydney. It's been my pleasure. Keep up the good work.
With this solid footing, we next head down to Tucson and talk with Kieron Suckling, Executive Director of the Center for Biological Diversity, to broaden our understanding of the implications these rewrites can have on our living systems. Stay tuned.
Was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Then dying coral reefs pushed us hard. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. Then record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. To find out how, go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.